Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights, this is The Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, you never know who you're going to run into at the Oregon Convention Center, and I was just looking down the way, and there's a lot of booths here for people who are interested in golf, free giveaways. This is the kind of place you could come, and I was looking down the way, and I saw, wait, that's Lloyd Neal down the way. Former Blazer 77 championship team, and he was hanging out at the Leisure Hour Junior Golf Program booth. Lloyd Neal, what are you doing at that booth?
Well, I'm a member of the Leisure Hour, the senior program, and so we got the junior where they start them out about 7 years old. And they have classroom training, and then they actually get out on the golf course. We use Coldwood Golf Course where they do the practice and everything, and they have a tournament. At the end of the season, at the par 3 course.
Where did you pick up golf in your life? Did you always play? No.
I started playing golf probably after I got out of basketball. And not very good at it now, but yeah. It's just something to
Me
do.
Me neither. But, yeah, I like being out there. I was just talking about that because sometimes it's just about an escape, you know, and you're out somewhere quiet and it's peaceful, you know.
Well, I think it's really this program is really, really good for younger kids because they got them from the youth and the intermediate into the advanced. And, you know, some of them have gone on and got scholarship and went to college. And I think a couple of the ladies has played on the LPGA that gone through the program.
That's neat. So if you're out here at the Oregon Convention Center, stop by the Leisure Hour Junior Golf Program booth and chat up Lloyd Neal. It's not often you get to see a world champion.
Well, I'll be here till 3 o'clock today.
All right, so you'll be hanging out. So, your daughter came out 1 year when you were playing in the celebrity tournament. And she drove your cart. Does she play?
No.
No golf.
No. She's back in New York.
Yeah.
She's one of those tapper dancer type of person.
Yeah, but she had a good time. She was driving the cart.
Never driven a car at all. And so she said, "Can I drive the cart?" I said, "Sure." I said, "Just don't go fast."
I love it. Let's talk a little bit of basketball. The NBA is talking about taking away the age limit on draft players again, where they would be able to draft an 18-year-old kid right out of high school. Would you you think this is a good idea?
Well, overall, I would say no.
Yeah.
I think there can be some individual that may be able to come out of high school and may be able to manage in the NBA. But I think overall, I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think it might help the college game because it would get rid of the one-and-done players. But the NBA game is going to get a whole bunch of guys who aren't ready.
That's true. And a lot of these young players, when they do draft them, they don't get to play that much anyway. Maybe 3 or 4 years down the line. So
we're talking to Lloyd Neal, former world champion with the Portland Trail Blazers. Came from Tennessee State University to the NBA. What did you think of Portland when you first got here out of college?
Well, I had to look it up at the beginning because I said, where is Portland? And so when I first got here, and it was mist and rain all the time and clock.
Yeah.
The sky's gray. And I was walking around. I said, does it ever stop raining here? They said, well, you need to get a raincoat. You don't need an umbrella. They said, you need a raincoat and a rain hat.
Yeah. But
it's a nice city. You know, it's close to the beach, close to the mountain. I don't ski, but I like going to the beach.
And you ended up staying here. Like, a lot of guys come and they play and they go away. What is it about Portland that made you stay?
I need a job. You know, when I played, you know, we didn't make that much money anyway. And even when I was playing, I had during the off season, I had a job during the off season.
Really? Yes. What were you doing in the off seasons?
Well, I used to work at First National Bank, Oregon.
Yeah.
And then I used to work for them during the off season.
Yeah.
And now it's going over to what is First Interstate now. Now Wells Fargo now.
Right. But you look at the money the guys that are making now. Does that make you mad, or do you just shake your head and go, "I was born too soon," or what do you think?
No, it doesn't make me mad. It's just, you know, before my time, you know, and you know, the league is making a lot of money. You know, so if they make, if the league can make the money, the players should make money too.
We're talking to Lloyd Neal, former NBA player. After your career, you went to work for the Internal Revenue Service. I don't think there could ever, is there another case of an NBA player you know about that finished his career and went to work for the IRS?
Not that I know of.
That is an unusual jump. You use your athleticism, and then you go into a job where you're using your brain.
Correct.
Yeah. So what was it about the IRS that drove you that direction?
Well, you know, like I said, I needed a job. So when I got out of basketball, you know, I didn't have the leisure just sit around and not do anything. So I did go down to interview with the First Interstate Bank at that point in time. Matter of fact, I think it was First National Bank. First National Bank. And I went over to the U.S. Marshal Service. I went down to the Internal Revenue Service. I almost became a deputy U.S. Marshal. So he said, well, go down to the IRS. I hear they hiring down there. So I went down to the IRS, and they hired me.
Your number 36 hangs in the rafters at the Moda Center. What does that mean to you, have your jersey retired by the Blazers?
Well, I think now it means more than it did when it actually got retired, because a lot of people having to say, well, yeah, you Lloyd needs a number up in the rafters. And my grandson loves it. He's 10 years old. He's not here now. He's moved down to Arizona, but I used to take him to the game. And he used to sit there and just stare at that jersey. He said, that's your jersey, Papa. That's your jersey.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he has a couple of my jerseys. He had an old one that I actually played in.
Yeah.
And he has a new one.
That has to be awesome for him to have his grandfather there and know that, you know, hey, my grandpa played in the NBA and averaged a double-double 1972, is that right?
Yes.
Averaged a double-double. Like, you know, that you'd be proud of that.
I am.
When you were growing up, was it – how early or how young were you when you said, I could make a career out of this?
Well, I don't think I did. You know, I didn't start playing organized basketball until I was a junior in high school.
Wow.
And basically, the reason I started playing, because I grew up in a little country town, Tarleton, Georgia, about 90 miles south of Atlanta. I said, there's no way that I'm going to be able to make a living staying here. So basically, I got into basketball. Hopefully, I get a scholarship. And that was my goal, to get a scholarship, go to college, and get an education. I never thought about the NBA until I got drafted. And then when I got drafted by Portland and I came out, and the amount of money that they would offer me, I said, God, you know, it's really not that much more if I were going out and get a regular job. Maybe make $5,000 or $6,000 more. But then I thought about it. I said, well, you know, I should give it a shot, because I would never want to be said, you know, I could have done that.
Right. Yeah, you could have looked back and had a regret over not being able to do that. We're talking to Lloyd Neal. He is hanging out here at the Oregon Convention Center as part of the Leisure Hour Junior Golf Program, and I dragged him on air. All right, 77 championship team. You know, I'll ask you that same question. How early in that season did you look around and go, we might win this thing?
Well, once we got into the playoff, you know, we had never made the playoff in the seven-year history. And once we got into the playoff, and as we started advancing, our first competitor was the Chicago Bulls. They was playing really, really good at that point in time. That was a tough series, and at that point in time, we played 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
So if you lost the first game, you was in the hole.
Yeah.
You know, because you got to come back and win that second game. And but then after we started advancing, and you know, and seeing how things progressed, I said, you know, we could possibly win this thing. And then when we got past L.A., I said, well, we got a good chance. Got a good chance.
Might as well. You're there, you know. Dr. Jack, what was he like to play for?
Very fundamental coach. Very demanding. Strict on fundamental. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that helped that team, because we was pretty good fundamental. And he had a program that we bought into. And sometimes I look at teams today, and you don't know what all the players buy into the system that the coach is trying to implement. But we bought into the system, and we did it, and we played hard. Our practice was difficult. The game was easy.
Yeah.
The practice was difficult.
What was difficult about the practices?
Well, we did a lot of fundamental. We did a lot of drills.
Yeah.
We didn't do a lot of scrimmage. We probably did maybe about 10 or 15 minutes of scrimmage. We did a lot of drills. And our practice was probably 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
But we did a lot of scrimmage. I mean, a lot of skills. 2-on-2, 3-on-3, rebounding, All kind of drill.
And you had Maurice Lucas and Bill Walton. You probably were running drills against those guys all practice.
Sometimes you were running drills against the guards and forward too, because you know, you be in situation games, you're gonna have to defend a guard. Yeah. You're gonna have to defend a small forward. So you know, you did all kind of things.
Who was Dr. Jack hardest on that team?
Hardest? I don't know whether he was hardest.
Was he? You know what I mean? There's always one player that the coach kind of singles out, and he because he knows what he can get out of that guy, that he rides him a little harder. Who was that guy?
Well, I don't know. Luke kind of had a way with Dr. Jack. I know we always would scratch, and so Luke didn't like to scratch.
Yeah.
And so Dr. Ramsey said, "Luke, you got to scratch. You got to scratch." And Luke just kind of look around and everything. But anyway, but during the game, Luke would be out on the floor before a game. He'd be doing all kind of scratching.
Right.
But in practice, he didn't like to scratch.
Yeah, he didn't want to do that. We're talking to Lloyd Neal, world champion 1977, NBA's all-rookie first team 1973. Spent his career in Portland with the Trailblazers. And, all right, I watched the game today. Sometimes I'm entertained by the athleticism. I don't love the basketball I'm seeing in the NBA. Do you watch? Are you a fan of the game now, or do you share that? I like the women's game more than the men's game now. I think I can say that.
Are you talking about college or professional?
All right, let's talk professional first.
Okay.
When you watch an NBA game, what do you see?
I scream. I yell. I try to coach from the stand. I'm a person that grew up playing basketball inside out and not outside in.
Yeah.
And I think if you live, you'll die by the jump shot. You know, I think you got to have a combination. You got to be able to play inside, because in the playoffs, if you can't play inside, then you don't have a good chance in winning a championship.
Yeah, and there are very few teams, I think, that really defend. That, like, Oklahoma City defends. I like watching them on defense, but I get a little bored watching kind of, let's dribble down, isolation, somebody's shooting a three, now the ball's going back the other way. Like, you know, nobody's really running anything.
Yeah, and defense is a part of the game. I see guys that players just go right around them, you know, stuff like that. So you got to be able to at least contain a player. You got to keep him between you and the basket. And then you got to have the help defense. That's why I said drill. We did all that type of stuff. If a person get beat, you got to help over here. And then this person have to go there. So, you know, if you do those things consistently, they become automatic in a game.
The women's college basketball game. I was watching Oregon and Oregon State. Did you see any of that?
No.
I
don't watch a lot of college games until they get into the playoff.
You want to see the tournament?
Yes.
Why don't you watch the early part of the season? Too much basketball?
No, I don't know. I never have.
You need to watch the women's college game. The highest the game has gotten better. They've gotten stronger. They're more athletic, and they're playing a game that you probably are more familiar with. And as I watch it, they're playing basketball, the basketball that I remember being played. So, okay. Lloyd Neal, check it out.
All right.
Go, if you're here out here in the next 45 minutes, Lloyd Neal will be at the Leisure Hour Junior Golf Program booth. It's not far from where I'm broadcasting from. Lloyd Neal, world champion, thank you. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you being part of our celebrity golf tournament every year.
Thank you, John.
You're a big draw. All right, Lloyd Neal, I appreciate him. Leave it right here. You got the bald-faced truth. We'll take your phone calls next. What do you see when you see the NBA game? What do you see when you see college basketball? 503-417-7575. I did not plan on having Lloyd Neal on the show, and I just looked over, and there he was sitting about 25 yards away at one of the booths. I moseyed over to Lloyd Neal and said, "You want to come on?" I mean, think about Lloyd Neal's career in Portland with the Trailblazers. He's spent 7 years in the NBA, won a championship, had his jersey retired, averaged a double-double. And when he's done, it's not like today's NBA game. He had to go get a job. And so the job that he went and got is he became an Internal Revenue Service agent. And that was his life after the NBA. Can you imagine getting audited? And 6'7" Lloyd Neal comes walking in. here's the audit, and I'm here to conduct it. It got me thinking about basketball, though. I am broadcasting at the golf show at the Oregon Convention Center. But it got me thinking about basketball. I asked Lloyd Neal what he thought of the NBA and what he thought of college. And he was very opinionated. And I'll be honest, I don't know if it came through on the radio. He's not watching women's college basketball. Okay, he's not. But I think he's caught up a little bit in what used to be women's college basketball. I don't know if this is politically correct or not, but I'm going to say it. The women are more athletic than they used to be. They're playing stronger than they used to be. They're faster than they used to be. And they're shooting at a higher percentage than they used to be. I can tell because the scores are up. The pace of the play is up. The game looks more like the men's college basketball that you probably remember of the 1970s, 1980s. I want you to tell me what you see when you watch the NBA today, whether you are a fan. If you're a fan of the NBA, you can call in and say, I love the NBA, and here's why. Here's what I see. If you're somebody who can't stand the NBA, says you're turned off by it, you can call in and say, hey, this is why I don't watch the NBA. If you're somebody who loves men's college basketball, but only during the tournament, call in and tell me that. Tell me why. Tell me what you're watching and what you see. 503-417-7575. I want to know what you see on the men's side and the women's side. Robert and Eugene is listening on Fox Sports. Eugene is going to lead us off. Robert, what do you see?
Well, I call on something else here, but I wanted to go back to your conversation with Lindsey Snell. Can I do that?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
And the reason is because I don't think I'm going to bring up something that you probably haven't discussed 100 times before over the years, but she brought up a point about women's sports in general and how they're growing. And part of the intrigue, I've been to 6 or 7 Oregon women's basketball games. I go to the softball games. I enjoy the heck out of watching her play. And I think that one difference between what we're seeing in women that's part of the draw is they seem to really play for the love of the game. There seems to be no other real reason, and you can see just the enthusiasm, the joyousness of the girls on the softball team, the girls on the sideline, and then there is the fan interaction. And my connection that I'm making here is I want to go back and relate this to Oregon football, because I think this is why I think Oregon football is in trouble. I'm not saying that they're in trouble. I'm not saying that, but I'm not saying the sky is falling. I'm not saying, but I'm not sure Oregon will ever come back or other college sports to what it was, because one of the things Oregon football had besides a great product during the Bellotti years was they had unbelievable fan experience. Fans had access to Mike Bellotti, the coaches, the players. There's the Pittman room after every single game at the home game. They had many fan supporting events, and you really felt like you were a part of the team in the way that the women make you feel like you are important today. And as the men's team struggles, I think they lost a lot of fans during the Chip Kelly years, because Chip really removed the fan. It became his part of his winning formula, if you will, I believe, was it's us against everybody else. They create a bunker mentality that everybody's against us, only we have each other's back, nobody else, all the rest is negative outside noise, and it's us against them. And even in some ways, I think the fans were a distraction. And he removed the Pittman room. He removed access. You could tell he didn't want to do interviews. I mean, it just became his snarky personality. And I'm not sure if they'll ever really recover those fans, particularly as the home experience gets better. Part of their diehards are getting older and don't want to make the walk and the stairs. And I think one way they might be able to reel some of these people back in is if they open access back up again and started acting more like women's basketball and more like women's
can you put
softball.
The genie back in the bottle? And that's a great point by Robert. I want to hit on a couple things that he said there. And tell me if you're tracking what he's saying. But part of the charm of women's college athletics is the notion that, the WNBA is hanging out there, but the money in the WNBA is not the same as the NBA. We had Ruthie Hebert at Oregon, one of the better power forwards in college, women's college basketball, suffer an injury on Monday night. I didn't hear anybody say in the wake of that injury that Ruthie had nothing to play for the rest of the season, that Ruthie should hang it up, that thank goodness she's okay, it's just a bone bruise, but man, that was a big scare. Ruthie should hang it up for the rest of the year. Let's fast forward to what? Wednesday night, you had Zion Williamson at Duke, the best player playing for the number one team in America, his sneaker blows out, and what happens? Everybody says, oh, he shouldn't play another game. You know, he's got to take care of his family. He's got to do what's best for himself. What's the difference there? Why were those two things said? Because is it mentality? Is it money? Is it both? 503-417-7575. I agree with the caller. I do think that the women who are playing in major college athletics don't have the stars in their eyes. They don't have the whispers in their ears. They don't have anybody telling them, hey, go out and play for you. Don't worry about your team. You got to do what's best for you. You hear a lot of talk about family. You hear a lot of culture that is built around family and women's athletics. I want to kick this around. What are we watching when we see the difference between men and women playing at a major level? I wanted to talk about basketball, but it's a great call and it's a great point. What is the difference? 503-417-7575. Further, he says Oregon football is dead because they've lost the connection with fans. And the women's programs in basketball at Oregon and Oregon State both do a remarkable job before games, after games, and during games, being ambassadors for the community, connecting with young kids who are out watching basketball, whether it's a young girl who is for the first time finding basketball and looking up and saying, gosh, that's a woman out there. I could do that someday. Or it's somebody who just has a role model, for crying out loud, that they can look up to, that is female, that is playing in a major college athletics game. And by the way, in front of a packed audience at Matthew Knight Arena on Friday night, or a packed auditorium at Gill Coliseum on Monday night. I thought that that was part of the allure or the charm of the game, was that there were a lot of men in the crowd who showed up and validated that event and said, this is the best ticket in town. I'm going to watch this game. And I'll be honest, I wasn't going to talk about this on air, but I'm going to talk about it now. I have not covered a lot of women's college basketball games in my life. I've been to a whole bunch of men's games. But I'll tell you, as the sports columnist at the Oregonian, when I'm sent to an event, even if it's Portland State men's basketball, Barrett Peary, the coach, looks up and always is like, hey, thanks for coming. Appreciate that you're here. And they notice, because if I'm at the game, it means that my editor went, huh, what's the most important thing going on right now? All right, Canzano, you go to that. So I'm sent wherever the action is, okay? So if I'm showing up at your game or your practice, it means that you are meriting attention. So the fact that I walked into Gill Coliseum on Monday night, I got to be honest with you, other media members turned to me and said, hey, you're here, that's awesome. I had fans coming up to me that said, oh, wow, you're at this game. The Oregonian's covering this game with its columnist. That's a big deal. And Friday night, Ken Goh went from the Oregonian and covered the game at Matthew Knight Arena. We were all in. Not because, hey, we want to be fair. This is a women's game and we cover the men's games. None of that was at play. What was at play on Monday night and Friday night was, this is the best damn basketball game going on in the state. This is really interesting and intriguing, and it deserves to have us here. Now, look, I got three daughters. That kind of makes me a little glassy-eyed when I think about the potential one day for them to attend a basketball game in which the officials are women, the person singing the national anthem was a woman, the players are all women, and to look out there and go, wow, there's 20,000 people that watch this game over the course of a Friday and a Monday. Now, maybe, just maybe, that charm will be lost over time. But it exists right now. I want to hear from you. 503-417-7575. Andrew's in Beaverton. Andrew, what's on your mind?
I was listening to you guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening to the comparison with, you know, what was going on with Ruthie, her injury, and then you look at some of the other athletes, whether you're talking basketball or even football, where they're sitting out bowl games and things like that.
Yes.
Just to save their health. And I think what the comparison is it's not black and white. I mean, you're looking at there's such more of a maturity in any male pro league compared to any female league. Maybe soccer, just because female soccer has been so much better than male soccer in the U.S., but it's just the maturity of the two. there's just so much more money involved with it. There's so much more hype involved with it. There's so much more, I think, riding on it. I mean, just look how much one of the two are getting paid, the average NBA player versus the average female player. There is a lot. I think there is a lot more to lose. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be the same care towards a female athlete, because I think they still, I mean, that's the money they make is still, it's not chump change.
But without, I think you're recognizing the same thing that I'm talking about, is that there is clearly a difference. And I wonder if 20 years from now, maybe it'll all be the same. Maybe the women's game will have, the money will have increased. Maybe the stakes will have increased. Maybe you'll have, you know, agents whispering in the ears of players telling them, hey, there's nothing in this for you. I find the men's college game to be selfish. And look, the word selfish comes with negative connotations. Maybe what I mean is the players are often thinking of their self-interest. And look, college by definition, the NCAA takes advantage of players left and right. Players probably should be compensated for what they're doing. But I find that on the men's side of the equation, we're often left saying, hey, is it worth it for this player to be playing? You know, should he be playing because he could get hurt and there's so much at stake? And on the women's side, you see women playing for the love of the game. 503-417-7575. You tell me, men's sports and major college sports, women's major college sports, why is it that the women's game is more charming? Is it money? Is it something that has been corrupted on the men's side? You tell
me. We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.